keeping you current on all things criminal. This is Crime Feed. Crime Feed. With Darren Kevinoki and Lonnie Coombs.
Welcome to Investigation Discovery's Crime Feed podcast. I'm Darren Kevinoki, and we are covering the ripped from the headlines cases that everybody is talking about.
And I'm Lonnie Coombs. And remember that this podcast is every week. So don't forget to come back and listen to us then.
And by the way, tell your friends, tweet us at ID Crime Feed. And of course, use those hashtags Crime Feed Podcast. And my favorite segment, hashtag Dumbest Criminals. And remember, please throw me a bone and give me some help on the Dumbest Criminal Contest. Yeah, more on that later.
He does need help. So today we are so excited to have a special guest with us, Chris Hansen. I'm sure you all recognize that name. Chris is the host of ID's newest summer hit series, Killer Instinct with Chris Hansen. And he's also currently in production on an online series called Hansen versus Predator.
And by the way, Chris, you don't know this, but you and I have a personal connection too that for me is very deep and important. Yeah, I'm a criminal defense attorney in Los Angeles and with offices throughout California. And you did one of your infamous sting operations down here in Southern California, where I had a couple of clients that that came out of it. And the thing that was so unique to me is both of these guys were married, and amazingly, both of their wives stuck by them through this whole process. And I always used to joke to friends, and I'd say, science does not have a tool to measure the short span of time that would happen if I came home and said to my wife, "Hey, honey, guess who I met today? It was Chris Hansen." And the moment she heard the word Hansen, like, I'd be magically served with divorce papers. And so it's just great that now I can come home and say, "Hey, I talked to Chris Hansen today, and my marriage will remain intact."
Well, it's legit, exactly. When I wrote the book on the Predator issue, I was on Jon Stewart's show, and he said, "Good news and bad news, Mom. I'm on the cover of a book. The bad news is it's Chris Hansen's book."
Chris Hansen. Exactly. Yes, I can relate. But let me ask you, Chris. It seems like predators are everywhere on the front page now. We've had, I mean, just recently, we've had Jared Fogle. There's an NFL cheerleader who's now taken a deal for sleeping with a 15-year-old. Gene Simmons, the rock star from Kiss, just had his home searched for child pornography, although all signs point to Gene Simmons not being implicated in that.
Yes, exactly.
Rosie O'Donnell's daughter, Chelsea, just had an issue where she turned up after being missing for a week in the home of a 25-year-old. What is going on?
Well, I think it's a problem that's always been there, and it's been exacerbated, obviously, by the Internet, the access 24 hours a day, the anonymity and the addictive nature of it. And, you know, people always ask, what do these guys have in common, especially when it comes to a guy like, you know, Jared Fogle? And I said, well, they don't stand out of a crowd. They come from all walks of life. In our investigations, we've seen doctors, we've seen clergymen, we've seen teachers, we've seen police officers, businessmen, all kinds of people. So it's not limited to one segment of the population. It could be the guy standing next to you at the dry cleaners on a Saturday morning. I mean, yes, of course, we've had people surface in our investigations with, you know, the word creep tattooed across their forehead.
That could be a red flag.
You know, it is. But generally speaking, the thing they have in common is that they come from all walks of life.
Well, and Chris, I think that's such a good reminder for us when we watch the Jared Fogle case unfolding. It's like this was, you know, the everyday guy that we all sort of related to. And now we see as they talk about the plea deal he's going to take, and his attorney says he's going to get therapy, he's going to be rehabilitated. And a lot of people are saying, what are you talking about? This is, you know, a child predator. He's a molester. I know you've been involved in taking, you've been involved in taking down more than 300 of these predators. Do you believe that they can actually be rehabilitated? Is that possible?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist, but you know, I have, as you said, interviewed some 300 of these guys, and I think they come from three different categories. There's the younger guy, the opportunist, who's a bit sheltered. He's shy. He goes online. He finds a 14-year-old. He's 21, 22 years old, figures, well, in 4 or 5 years it won't make a difference. Everybody will be legal. He starts doing things he wouldn't normally do in person, and boom, he's in there. Okay, this kid can be warned. He can be put on probation. he can get his hand slapped, and he will never do it again. Mm-hmm. There's a middle area of guys who have a predilection for this sort of thing, but wouldn't act upon it if it wasn't for the internet, as I said before, the three A's, addictiveness, the anonymity, and the access. And so they say things online they wouldn't say in person, face-to-face. They do things, and suddenly they get this obsession, and the only thing that's going to satisfy it is actually fulfilling this date with this younger boy or girl, and that's when we see him knocking on our door. The third category are the heavy hitters. These are guys that would be doing this with or without the internet, at the shopping center, trying to be a Little League coach, at the movie theater, at the park, whatever. They can't be fixed. So, we in society, in America, want a one-size-fits-all solution, and the fact is there isn't one. Some guys have to be put away forever. Some guys can be treated with punishment and therapy. Some guys can just be warned and put on probation and on the sex offenders list, and they're done. They won't offend again. Mm-hmm. But until we come to terms with that, it's not going to go away. And that's why I always say, people say, why do these guys stop and talk to you? Well, because I genuinely want to get inside their minds and figure out what makes them do what they do so we can better protect our kids, our potential victims in the future from falling prey to this.
Chris, you mentioned the sex offenders list, and it's such an interesting topic because I think that's one of those things that was so well-intentioned when it first came out.
Absolutely.
And one of the problems is that there's a variety of offenses that will land somebody on that sex offenders list,
right,
without distinction to which of those three categories that you've described an offender might fall in. And
it almost
seems like the car alarm phenomenon, where it used to be that when a car alarm went off, people were, oh my God, a car's getting broken into. And now if a car alarm goes off, people are like, hey, who's the idiot who still has a car alarm? And I'm just wondering how effective that is over the long haul.
Well, I think it's been very effective. I think when it becomes improper is when you have a 17-year-old, high school kid who gets in trouble for having sexual relations with his 15-year-old girlfriend, albeit consensual.
Right.
And technically that is, statutory rape in some states.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they railroad a 17-year-old kid who, you can argue morally that, should have been doing it, but it was consensual. And here's a kid who was doing what other kids are doing, 1 year older, 1 year younger,
right,
and now he's on the list, and that's going to prevent him from going to college or getting a job or playing football in college or whatever. And that's the problem with it. Now, on the other hand, if you're living in a neighborhood and you want to go to your state's website and find out who's there, and there is a fellow living in the neighborhood who's on the list, you should have a right to know that.
Yeah.
But the bigger problem, quite honestly, is the sex offender who's unregistered. We wrote along with the U.S. Marshals who go after these people, and if somebody's registered, they can keep track of them. If they're unregistered, well, that's the problem, mm-hmm, and that's why the U.S. Marshals goes after these guys.
Yeah, which is very important. Hey, I wanted to follow up on something you said, Chris, about when these guys, you do catch them and they start talking to you and you have such a great way of getting them to talk. I'm always fascinated about how many will just start sort of bearing their soul to you. Do you find them that perhaps it's a relief to them to feel like they can talk to somebody? Or what do you think is the psyche that, leads themselves to being so open about it?
Yeah,
I think it's a combination of things. I think, a third of it is exactly what you say. They've been caught. They're relieved. It's cathartic. They want to get it off their chest. I had a guy in Ohio tell me, he said, I was online and, it seems like at one moment I was chatting with people who are my age, and I got older and the people stayed the same age, and all of a sudden I'm here as a teacher, in Cincinnati. He drove all the way up to Greenville, Ohio to meet somebody he thought was an underage kid. And then again, I think some people, didn't know whether I was the cop or the mad dad or whatever, and they thought they had to stay. And then ultimately it evolved into people saying, oh, wait, before I even said a word, you're Chris Hansen. I said, how did you know that? He said, well, I watch the show all the time.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Which is, and again, anybody can jump out from around the corner or from behind the bushes and scare somebody and make, 45 seconds of dramatic television. My job is not to do that. It's to get in somebody's mind, engage them, and talk to them. And it requires a little bit of respect. Now, I'm not defending anything these guys have done, just like when we interview a killer, in a prison for Killer Instinct on Investigation Discovery. I mean, I'm not defending anything. But the fact is, you know, I'm there to get their story, to get in their mind, to figure out why they did what they did, and to protect people from becoming victims. And when you approach it that way, more times than not, people will open up their souls and talk to you.
Yeah. Hey, I've got another area that I'm dying to talk to you about, and that is the female predator. We've got this case that just popped up.
Sure.
This Molly Shattuck, she was a former NFL cheerleader. She's 48 years old, and she just pled guilty to felony fourth-degree rape for sexually assaulting a 15-year-old young boy, friend of her son. She was looking at 15 years in prison. She got probation and a suspended jail sentence. I have two questions. One, did you ever catch a female predator on your show? And two, why do you think, this is a huge pet peeve of mine, why do you think that the punishments for the women predators are so much lighter than for the male predators, and do you think that's fair?
We never had a female predator in any of our investigations, and I think it's because of what the experts tell us, which is when it comes to male predators, they rather enjoy the anonymity of the whole thing. Female predators do not. So in a female predator situation, you see the teacher student, the parent of a son who they go after, the friend, and that sort of thing. Now, I don't pretend to understand the psychology of it, but I think, you know, the reality is when it comes to, you know, a 15 or 16-year-old kid who, you know, gets involved in a situation like this, there is, for whatever reason, and again, I'm not defending it, there's a wink and a nod as opposed to the other situation where, you know, a young girl, a young boy is victimized by a man.
Mm-hmm. But
I think it's societal. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I mean, I think we can all agree as lawyers, journalists, and, you know, podcast hosts that it's creepy, you know, illegal, and wrong. I mean, just there's no reason for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're right. There seems to be, you know, some sort of inequity when it comes to sentencing.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know, some of these gals get a pass on this for whatever reason.
So speaking of creepy and perhaps wrong, there was the story that's been in the headlines recently involving Rosie O'Donnell's 17-year-old daughter, Chelsea, who was missing for a week, a full week. And as a parent, oh, my God, I just can't even imagine anything more
horrible.
Painful than and horrific than wondering where your child is. And Chelsea is somebody who apparently had, and this is well publicized, that she had some challenges, some mental challenges, was on medication.
Actually off medication at the time.
Had gone off, and that was part of the problem. But so she's missing for a week, and then she turns up at the home of this 25-year-old guy named Stephen Shearer, who has now been charged with endangering the welfare of a child and distribution of obscenity relating to some images of himself that were sent. And so there's that aspect of it, too. So I'm wondering, Chris, in your view, is it still predatory behavior when there's a more narrow age gap between them? Especially in this case, his lawyer is claiming that Shearer reasonably believed her to be 18 because apparently they hooked up through Tinder, where he's relying on the age screening feature of that app, and that it's tied into your Facebook and only serving up people that are 18 or more. What do you think about a situation like that?
Well, it's a close call in a very gray area. You know, my heart goes out to any parent, Rosie O'Donnell or anybody else whose, you know, child has, you know, mental illness or challenges. I mean, it's a vexing issue, and obviously, you know, she has means, and I'm sure she's a good parent and provides well for her daughter, but you can't always control what these kids do, whether they're 16, 17, 18, or 24. So, you know, is the guy a bad guy? I don't know. You know, I have to be careful because I haven't really reported on the case, so I don't want to go too far out on a limb here. But I think, you know, anytime you've got a child who's got challenges, you try to protect them as best as you can, but they're going to do what they're going to do. And, you know, obviously she got into a very difficult situation, and thankfully she's been found, and hopefully she gets the help she needs.
Well, and we'll see how it plays out. But as a parent, I'm the father of a 13-year-old girl who loves the internet.
Yep.
And so what am I to do if I'm not going to be there watching all of her web surfing activities? Do you have any takeaways?
Absolutely. You know, my boys are 23 and 21, right? So you want to think that they're past the trouble on the internet, but, you know, they're on it. They're looking at stuff. They're doing whatever they do. You know, I used to say, limit the time your kids are online. If they're online for 2 hours a day, then they'll get to the business of chatting with friends, checking the movie schedule, downloading music, and that's less time for them to be loitering in places where they can be approached by a predator. The issue today is, I mean, remember, when we started doing the To Catch a Predator investigations, we were merely using decoys on chat rooms at AOL and Yahoo. Well, today we've got, you know, Kick and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and Backpage and Craigslist. I mean, there are so many different ways where kids can be approached. And, by the way, they're not on the laptop or the desktop. Their computer is in their back pocket, on
right.
their bedstand.
Yeah.
So I think you have to have a discussion that's age-appropriate to your children. And I think you have to say, look, the person you're chatting with online who provides a picture that's a cute 14-year-old boy, maybe a 63-year-old fat man mm-hmm. in a basement in his underwear surrounded by empty pizza boxes trying to trick you. And kids respond yeah. to that kind of image because it's icky, it's gross.
Right.
Kids don't like to be tricked online. And again, you have a different conversation with a 12-year-old than you do with your 16-year-old. But, you know, I can tell you stories, you know, and I wrote about this in my book about, you know, 14-year-old girls in Alabama. And, you know, on a Christian chat room for teens, thinking they're talking to a cool surfer dude who's supposed to be 15 years old, ends up being a 40-year-old guy who comes and ends up killing one of these kids.
Well,
the daughter of a police officer who trained his kids to be very careful. I mean, so, you know, it's rare, you know, but it happens. And so once in a while, I think it's okay to tell your kids a scary story and say, look, this is what can happen. Just like, I get a call from a former neighbor when I was a kid, the daughter of that neighbor, saying, my mother's been contacted online by these guys who want money, and she wants to give it to them. I said, well, have her call me. And, you know, it's Mrs. Collins. I said, look, it's little Chrissy Hansen from down the street from 72. And now, you know, it's 2015. You can't do this. It's a scam. Trust me when I tell you, I've reported on it. So it's the same message. It's just age appropriate.
Right. And I think it's such an important part of parenting nowadays to talk about the internet and the dangers of being online. That's why I think that your book, which is To Catch a Predator, Protecting Your Kids from Online Enemies Already in Your Home, is really vital reading for all parents, because a lot of parents think they can just ignore it. You know,
right.
like my kid will never get into anything and they're too naive. They don't understand it. They have no idea what's going on the online and what parents have to do now. They have to be able to educate themselves and know the different techniques. And that's why your book is so crucial.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. You know, that's why I did it, because, you know, what we found in doing the series and again, we're, you know, getting ready and geared up and we're in production to do the next evolution of it, is that, you know, there were a lot of ancillary stories that we didn't have time to report on television. So, you know, that's why I wrote the book, because there are a lot of cautionary tales out there. And I think there are a lot of things that, common sense things that you may not think of off the top of your head. Look, everybody's busy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dad's work, mom's work, kids, you know, hopefully are busy with sports and homework and they stay out of trouble. But the internet opens up the whole world, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. But it sounds
good
like
and
it's,
bad.
Yeah,
it's like
no,
fire.
No
yeah.
better investment for a parent than to read up on this. And it sounds like your book is an awesome place to start. So we encourage all of our listeners, go get Chris's book. And, oh, yeah, read the book.
Yeah. Don't just get it.
Because he knows what he's talking about. So, hey, Chris, thank you so much. We're
hey,
grateful
guys.
For the
yeah,
time,
the
and we're looking
Thanks
forward
for
to Killer Instinct with Chris Hansen and also your online series, Hansen versus Predator.
Looking forward to that.
We know who
Coming
wins
up.
That one.
Yeah.
It's all about Hansen. Team Hansen.
Thanks
so
right,
much,
guys.
Chris.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Be well. How awesome is Chris Hansen?
Yeah, and so important as we see the headlines continuing on that we just can't ignore this as parents.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what age your kids are, we really need to understand. And as a society, we need to understand, you know, the predator psyche more and more. So
it's a great conversation to be in. So there's another story that's in the news now involving Caitlyn Jenner and this misdemeanor manslaughter case.
Mm-hmm.
So Caitlyn Jenner, back when she was known as Bruce, was involved in this chain reaction car crash now what pronoun do we use? I'm sorry, I want to be politically correct. Well, it was Bruce at the time, so he caused it or she caused it?
Well, at the time it was Bruce, now
it was
Caitlin.
Bruce,
yeah.
Okay, so he caused the chain reaction car crash, not by exceeding the speed limit, but according to law enforcement, driving too fast asked for conditions.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well,
that's what the speed. Well, whatever. No. We'll talk. Yeah. That's what the speed limit's all about. That presumptively reasonable.
Presumptive
amount.
Is the.
So anyway, notwithstanding Bruce lawfully obeying the speed limit did cause this accident, and sadly a woman died. Now, and when I say now I mean right now this week, the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office is considering the filing of charges. This would be misdemeanor manslaughter. So Lonnie, I need you to tell us a little bit about this. I mean, you were a district attorney in that very office, the right. one that's now considering filing. What are they considering? What's misdemeanor manslaughter all about? What is the deal with these cases?
So I actually was in the Malibu DA's office for a number of years. These cases happened all the time. It happened on Pacific Coast Highway, which is one of the most beautiful drives in the nation. It's also one of the most dangerous ones because it's very windy. There's very limited visibility. There's houses right up to the edge of it. There's people. There's bicyclists along there. And if you do any little infraction in your driving, you can easily kill somebody. We had a case where a gal was driving. Her fiancé was in the passenger seat. She was driving slowly, fell asleep momentarily, hit a flatbed truck, and decapitated her fiancé like that. So that's essentially
her fiancé.
Yes. And that's essentially what we're looking at here. We call these cases essentially, but for the grace of God, go I. You can be driving what you think is fairly safely, like Bruce at the time, Caitlin now. She was driving the speed limit. But as we talk about, the speed limit is a presumptive rule, meaning you are supposed to adjust your speed to the conditions. And apparently the conditions were such that the officers who investigated it said that even going the speed limit was too fast, was unsafe. So there is an infraction, which he was charged out with, I think, at the time. Well, actually not charged yet. This is what they've submitted it for. And because there's that infraction, the DA can file this vehicular manslaughter charge, and it's a maximum of 1 year in jail. Now, because...
And that's because it's a misdemeanor manslaughter.
Right.
And it's a misdemeanor manslaughter because it's just a traffic infraction that was the genesis of this. If it was a more serious offense,
yeah,
like a felony offense...
Well, like if he'd been impaired, if he'd had any drugs or alcohol in his system, or if he had been texting, anything like that, adding
that would be gross
right,
negligence.
Right. Then you'd be talking about a felony. But because it was essentially going a little too fast for the conditions and someone died, that is technically a vehicular manslaughter charge. Most likely, a charge will be filed.
Oh, really? You think they're going to file?
Technically, it's there. But whether they'll get any jail time or not, probably not. That would be very unlikely in this case. However, that's the criminal case we're talking about. There's a civil case pending out of this, Darren. How is this going to affect that case?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a wrongful death action that's been filed by the family of the woman who was killed. And what's interesting is because there's been this looming specter of the criminal filing, that has a tendency to slow down the activity in a civil case, primarily because when somebody has these looming potential criminal charges, there's usually delays in the civil discovery process. That discovery process is where the opposing side will seek to get admissions, will seek to take somebody's deposition, and they can't, the target can't do that because they've got this Fifth Amendment right to remain silent.
In the criminal case. Not in the civil case.
Right, but this is where protective orders get issued and lawyers mm-hmm. will fight about this. If I have a client who's got this pending criminal case mm-hmm. and now a civil lawyer wants to take their deposition, my answer is hell no. I'm going to get a protective order that other than state your name, they're not talking because anything else could potentially be used against them in the criminal case. And as long as that's a live issue, I'm certainly going to fight every step of the way to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Well, that's why the judge usually in the civil case will react by saying, we're going to put the civil case on hold
right.
until the criminal case is done.
Exactly. And now here, if your prediction holds up and there is a criminal filing which results in a conviction, what really gets to be interesting is whether that criminal conviction can now be used as a sword by the plaintiffs in the civil lawsuit. So sometimes the answer is yes, but not always. There are times when a criminal conviction, especially on misdemeanor cases, really the fact of the conviction isn't going to be used, or it's not able to be used against the person.
That's why a lot of times criminal defendants, especially in misdemeanor cases, will plead no contest, and we hear that a lot. And essentially it means that I'm not going to contest the charges. I'm not pleading guilty. I'm not saying I'm guilty. I've just decided in the big spectrum of things that it's best for me to not contest these charges. I will go ahead and accept the responsibility and get the sentence.
Right.
And so I'm just going to enter a plea of no contest.
Right, because the court tells folks and that they are going to accept that no contest plea, but it's going to be treated in the criminal court system
the same as
a guilty plea. Although in California, and this will make for some interesting water cooler conversation, folks, that California has a special kind of plea called People versus West. And it's a special finding that the defendant would ask for that basically says, hey, look, I want to plead no contest under People versus West, which means I'm not admitting anything. I'm only doing this deal because I want to capture the benefit of this plea bargain settlement that's been offered to me. And I am not going to stipulate or agree to the factual basis for the plea. I don't agree that I did what they said I did. I'm just doing this deal because I know that the pitfalls of litigation can be really, really ugly. So I just want to grab this deal. And so you can't use this against me. So that's another way that this could get played.
Yeah, they'll review the case. It doesn't sound like it's too complicated of a case and make their decision. So as far as keeping an eye on that case, I've got another case that I'm going to keep my eye on.
Do tell.
Yes. So I find this case to be fascinating, not just because the facts are somewhat salacious, juicy, however you want to say it. There's two elderly couples in Atlanta who are friends, the Bartons and the Greens, and they're all pretty much in their 70s. And they've been friends for years, and they've done a lot together. They've worked together. They socialize together. Larry Barton is the four-time mayor in the town there. He's done 15 gospel recordings. He does weekly cable shows, and he's actually done his cable shows with the Greens.
Solid stand-up guy.
Both the husband and the wife of the Greens. Well, when Larry Barton was going to get his, going to the barbershop, where he also cuts hair, he does many things, obviously, he was approached by a person with a wig and a trench coat and a baseball bat, and this person assaulted Larry Barton with the baseball bat and then tried to flee in a bicycle. Well, they found out that it was actually his friend, Benny Green. And they found out that it had to do with the fact that Benny Green found some videos of his wife, who's 68, and Larry Barton, who's 75, in compromised position.
Wow.
In three different videos, three different times. Benny Green has been charged with first-degree assault, and he's out on $150,000 bail. Now, what I find fascinating about this case, Darren, is as our society gets older, which we are, and you know, a lot of our population is getting to the 60s, 70s, 80s, we're going to be seeing a lot more cases like this. And I think that we have to start adjusting our perception that, you know, elderly people don't commit crimes of passion, crimes of violence. We're hearing a lot more elder abuse. And there's going to be more burglaries and theft charges because we know a lot of our elderly people are in financial straits. So it's going to be interesting to see how we, as jurors, handle this kind of case. And, you know, can we get convictions on this? And then what type of punishment? You know, we're going to give to these elderly people. Do we put them in jail for 20 years? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's not a great safe place to put somebody who is elderly, who's potentially frail.
And yet it was a very bad case. I mean, it was, you know, a violent attack. So it's going to be interesting how we start handling these cases.
I'm waiting to see if the divorce happens. All right. Well, here's one that I'm keeping an eye on. If you're into podcasts and if you're here, I'm saying you are. there's one you may have heard of called Serial that's now
so
in the news.
Good.
So the attorney for the Serial podcast subject, Adnan Syed, says that key cell phone evidence that was used against Syed at his trial was unreliable, according to the phone company's own warning, and it should have been excluded in the murder trial. So there was a court motion that was just filed where basically they say that incoming calls to Syed's cell phone were used by prosecutors to place him at Lincoln Park, where authorities believe the body of his ex-girlfriend was buried. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he was convicted in 2000 of murder, and he's now serving a life sentence. But Brown, who's the attorney, contends that the cellular carrier AT&T had actually included a warning about the accuracy of the cell tower data on a fax cover sheet that they sent to Baltimore police. Mm. And it says, and I quote, "Outgoing calls only are reliable for location status. Any incoming call will not, in capital letters, not be considered reliable information for location." Mm. So the argument goes that if that warning had been properly raised at trial by Syed's previous defense attorney, much or perhaps all of that cellular evidence would have been rendered inadmissible. So they're trying to get an evidentiary hearing.
Yeah.
This is such an interesting one, and I know it's a case that's captivated millions of people.
Absolutely. And it also tells you the power of the podcast, right? Because it seems very clear that this case would not have ever gotten to this stage had it not gotten the attention from that podcast. So.
Absolutely. So we'll both keep our eyes on that. Now let's get to everybody's favorite segment.
Yay!
Dumbest criminals.
Dumbest criminals.
We love our dumb criminals.
Okay, I'm going to go first.
Okay.
Thank you, Darren. All right. There were two people, Albert Bailey, and he had an unnamed juvenile accomplice, and they wanted to rob a bank in Connecticut, not Florida, not Texas, Connecticut. So to streamline this procedure, they decided that they would call the bank in advance and warn them, say, hey, we're coming. We're going to rob the bank. Could you get some money together so that we can just walk in, get the money, and walk out? Nice of them. And the bank said, oh, sure. Come on in. We'll have your money ready for you. So a few minutes later, they walk in. Meanwhile, of course, the bank employee has called the police. The police are ready to go. They wait until the robbers accept the money that is given to them from the bank employees. They walk out into the arms of the police, who are all ready to take these so considerate robbers into custody.
Chivalry is not dead.
Very polite, well-mannered.
Now, I've got excellent, well done.
Thank you.
I've got one from a community called Oak Hill, and I don't know where that is, but I'm going to assume it's in Florida. Why not?
Okay.
So,
poor Florida.
An Oak Hill community couple discovered a thief in their home. How did they discover this thief in their
home?
How
did they, Darren?
Because the man of the couple told a joke,
yes,
and then they heard somebody upstairs laughing. But there wasn't supposed to be anybody else in the house. So I guess it just goes to show, if you're going to be burglarizing a house and someone tells a joke,
Don't laugh.
Restrain yourself.
Must have been a really good joke.
I know. I want to know. Wait, I wonder if it was my offensive joke.
Oh,
I have some jokes.
Yes, he does.
I will save those for another day when no one is listening. So those are our dumbest criminals for the week. Please be sure to go online and tweet at us at ID Crime Feed and use the hashtag either Crime Feed Podcast or hashtag Dumbest Criminals. And by all means, if you have any helpful suggestions for Dumbest Criminals, you can just tweet at me directly, please. I'm begging you. No, it is such a privilege to be here. I'm Darren Cavanocchi, if you haven't figured that out by now. And thank you so much for listening.
And I'm Lonnie Coombs. Remember, if you want more shocking true crime stories, watch Investigation Discovery or visit crimefeed.com.
Keeping you current on all things criminal. Crime Feed.
Crime Feed.
With Darren Cavanocchi and Lonnie Coombs.